It's that time again.
We go beyond the jive.
Join our hosts, John Swan and Natalie B.
Brave the sting of beekeeping to reap the sweet rewards.
All you Hive Jive junkies out there, this is the Hive Jive. Jive.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back.
How are you today?
I am doing fantastic. How about you?
I am trying not to blow away because apparently we are in a storm alley where, you know, one after another. So southern Arkansas, not even a week ago, got hammered with a bad tornado tore up Little Rock, the state capital. And the entire state, all the way up in through Missouri, is currently in a moderate risk of the exact same scenario, only a potentially worse for tonight.
I hope you have your red slippers, and then we'll know if something happens to the connection. That's what it is.
That's right. Poof, gone.
Yeah. Hoping you won't blow away.
Did he lose power or did he blow away? I will click my heels 3 times.
There you go.
I'm very close to Kansas. I don't know if that's a good thing, but
in this case, I'm not so sure, right?
I don't want to go back. Today we're going to be talking about the microbiome of cities and how bees have been helping to identify different things. And it kind of ties in with some other stuff that we've talked about. But before we get into that, I was going to give an update on the ever evolving scenario of these unexpected packages that we talked about on last week's episode that showed up unexpectedly.
What's going on with that? Did you get them?
Yeah, we did the recording. I went out and I built the hives as fast as I could. And first thing that next morning, I went and picked them up. So that catches us up to speed with that. I went ahead and installed them both into 2 brand new top bars. They were the 3-foot top bars like you and I had talked about, where I kind of shortened them down, tried to make use of the size of lumber that I could purchase here locally and put them together. Mm-hmm. And I built one of them without legs. Mm-hmm. So it is setting up on cinder blocks around the side of the house, kind of off the foundation of the house. Mm-hmm. And the other one I built with legs, and I built it like stupid tall. I was in such a hurry. I was using scrap lumber that I had, and I usually make the legs somewhere between, it's usually about 3 foot on average, but then they're at an angle. So it's a little bit shorter. And with the height of the hive, it comes almost like waist high or a little bit like tummy area, you know, at the most. No, this stupid thing, I have to work
it. It's right under your chin.
It feels like it. If you're behind it, it is, because also everything here is on a slope, right? So it's like a 40-degree angle.
Like one set of legs shorter than the other.
It's like on my conversion hive, I do. The back legs are short and the front legs are long to balance it out. And I should have done that on this one. But again, I was going fast and furious and I got it done. And then I took it out there and flipped it over to set it up. And I was like, well, that's not right. So the freakishly tall 3-foot long top bar hive is out there. And I had to use all kinds of things because it's more level, but it's still not level. It's just not as steep as where the other one is. And so there was a big log there and I was able to like set the back legs up on that with another board underneath it and like screw it all together so that it's propped up the way that it should be. But really it was like, oh, well, whatever. And then I put the bees in it and I was like, I really should have adjusted this and fixed it before I did that. So now I manage it from the front instead of from the back where you're supposed to, because if I'm at the back, like you said, it's like up to my chin. If I manage it from the front, it's like mid chest-ish area. I can still see into the hive and see what's going on. So that's not so bad, but it's a much more up close and personal experience.
So I want pictures. Are they on Instagram yet?
There are some videos on Instagram, and that's actually what I wanted to give the update about today. I don't know if I took any like stock, just still photos, but so here's the deal. Very much of this is in line with do as we say, not as we do, because sometimes
what we
sometimes what we do is very risky. And unless you have a lot of colonies, you probably shouldn't do those things, but they make good learning lessons and experiences. So we try to educate you in the proper way. And if you decide to deviate or literally imitate us in another way, we cannot be held responsible.
So this is the way I look at it. There's the theory and there's what's optimal and everything like that. But once you start getting more experience, you can start pushing the boundaries. And I think that's what we're doing. We're really trying the limits of our knowledge and how it adapts to reality. And
yeah,
you're right. It's absolutely a learning experience. How far can you get away with stuff?
What can you get away with? Right. So here's what I'm trying to get away with. I installed both of the packages and I got them all set up. They're all good to go. I got them a little bit of feed. I did two of the safe passage comb guides on two of the top bars. And then the other two bars were ones that had like half an inch or so remnant of comb left over from the bear attack. And I divided that equally, put them into the hives, got it all set up. Now here's where what you should do, it comes into play. Once you install a package, you should leave the damn thing alone for at least a week and let them settle in.
Oh yeah.
And not go back and screw with it.
Right.
But because of the way that I attached the queen cages, she was kind of offset and hanging over underneath like a bar and a half, right? She wasn't directly underneath her bar. And I was sitting there and I was like, you know what? They're going to start building comb and they're going to incorporate the queen cage into the comb. And then I'm going to have to like chop it all up and it's going to be a mess. So I'm going to go in on day three. And take out the queen cage as if the queen has been released, or at least manipulate things around the comb so that it doesn't screw everything up. And again, in a top bar too, you want to make sure that they're starting those first few combs in the right direction, in the right spot, in line, you know, all that fun stuff. So I was like, even though you're not supposed to screw with them, you should just let them be. Right. I'm going to go screw with them. So I go over to the one that's at the side of the house. Mm-hmm. And it is textbook scenario. They've already got one comb that was, it doesn't on Zoom. You can't really see.
Right,
it was at least 6-7 inches down, like almost to the bottom of the hive.
Wow.
And already starting to come out. So they did like gangbang, knocked out this one comb perfectly. And it was on one of the bars that had the remnants of natural wax.
So, okay.
Okay. But they had also started on one of the comb guide bars. And that's where all of the bees were clustered for the majority that were hanging out, one behind and one in front. And so I was able to find the queen. She was on that big comb. She was already out. And I was like, oh, perfect. So I pick it up, kind of scoot it aside, get the queen cage off of the other one, pull it out, put everything back in. And I'm like, awesome. They're doing great. They've got a comb and a little starter comb. That starter comb, again, is on the comb guide. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, so this is going good. Close it all back up. Then I go to the freakishly tall hive. Well, when I first look at it, there's some dead bees in the entrance portal. And I'm like, okay, well, I mean, that happens. But it kind of seemed like they were kind of clogging it up a little bit. And I was like, oh, that's not good. No. So I spin the entrance portal and the biggest chunk of them kind of fall out. But there was still room for bees to go in and out above it.
Right.
So they were still landing and going in and out. But it was clogging up the majority of that entrance. So I clean them out of there. I go 5 bars over from the far end where the entrance is there and pop out the bars because that's where the queen's at. And mm-hmm. I'm going to just work my way back over. And there's no way they should be past right. that. Well, when I pop out the 2 bars and I look down, I see a few more dead bees on the floor.
Ooh.
And then I pop out 2 more bars and I'm not seeing any bees. They're not on the bars. They're not anywhere right there. And I look and there's that whole side's empty. There's nothing there. There's just the queen cage hanging there. No. And I was like, no. So I, going through my thought process as I'm working through this, I'm like, oh my God, they absconded and they left the queen, or they absconded and took her with them. I don't really know. And these bees that are coming and going must be bees that are robbing out the food jar that I put in there for them.
Okay.
And so I work my way over. I pull out the bar that actually has the queen cage on it. And I look. They're all in the cage and they're all initially dead. All of the nurse bees that are in there, the attendants, they're all dead. The queen looks like she's dead. But then I notice she's moving very lethargically. And I was like, oh, my God, she's still alive. But for whatever reason, initially thinking, they left. They said, screw it. And they left her in there in that cage. And I was like, man, so I pull her out and I stick her in my pocket. And now I'm like, I got to take this food container out of here because all it's doing is attracting robbers to this hive location. So I start sliding bars in mass quantities over to go towards the food container. And all of a sudden, this massive pile of bees drop.
We were in the back.
They were like two bars away from the feeder. And it was a huge cluster of bees back there. And I was like, holy crap. So I move another bar more cautiously now because I realized there were bees back
there. They had a queen.
Yeah. Way to jump ahead.
Sorry. Kill your suspense. Kill your story.
No, you're fine. You're fine. But that is exactly what happened. I pull out the bar that has a very nice comb on it. Mm-hmm. And here's the kicker. This year's queens have red dots. Both of the queens inside the cages have red dots. Oh. There is a perfectly beautiful yellow dot queen walking across that comb. Oh. That was last year's color.
I know.
And so I'm like, oh, wait a minute. And my first thought was, because I'm still stuck on the absconding, robbing. And I'm like, did a swarm move in here and literally like just supersede my entire tiny little package?
That's not my guess.
No. And then when I got to thinking about it, I was like, son of a gun. When they were making these packages, they're different places have different ways of doing it. But if you dumb it down into the simplest version, they just start taking bees from everywhere and shaking them into a massive funnel that goes down through a queen excluder. Right. And then all the bees fall down until they get the weight that they need to. And then they get dumped in a package. I mean, that's it. And they're from everywhere. Somehow this queen from 2022 slipped into a package. And I don't know if she made it through the queen excluder, if she flew in separately into the package. I don't know. But there was a loose queen in this package with the bees, which also kind of makes sense because that package, the cluster was not around the can. It was off to the side. Mm-hmm. They were around her or with her.
She was probably in there walking around like she owned the world.
She was, because she could move freely. And so they had all accepted her and accepted her pheromones. And they segregated themselves to the opposite side of the hive from where the other queen was.
From that red queen.
That's right. From the red dot queen. They were like, yeah, we don't want to be with you. So they went to the back and they started building. Now, to their credit, on flat bars with no comb guides, no ridges, no popsicle sticks, no nothing, they started building that comb in a straight line in the middle of one of those bars. That's dumb luck, because at that point they're all smooth and there's just a little line where the gap between the bars is.
Yeah.
But they did good. And I was like, well, that's awesome. So I had to do like one little tweak on one side just to like push it in a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, oh, well, this is awkward. So I have a brand new queen in my pocket. You've got last year's queen in here, but you've all already accepted her. You've already got a comb. There was already eggs in the comb. And I'm like, okay, well, this little girl in my pocket kind of looks like she's dying. So I like pry it open, the queen cage. I pry open one of the staples so I can take the screen off the top. I dump out all of the dead attendants. And then I grab a couple of bees that are on the comb with the eggs and I shove them in there. And then I put it back together and shove the staple back in it.
Oh, nice.
I take it inside and I put a little drop of honey and a little drop of water right at the edge of where the candy kind of comes into the open chamber. Set it on the table. And I was like, all right, we'll see what happens. If they manage to resuscitate her and everything goes well, I'll figure it out later. But for now, I'm done. Both of the colonies are good. I did move everything up to the front where I want them to be instead of in the back. So I did move their progress up there, and slowly all the ones that had fallen when I dropped the bar, they all started marching up towards the front where everybody was. So I'm like, all right, we're all good. Well, I woke up the next morning and Little Miss Red Dot was all kinds of awake, alive, and energetic, and like running around inside that cage. And she was like, bring on the world. And I'm like, well, now I have three queens, but only two colonies. I don't have anything else coming anytime soon. And I don't necessarily know what to do with her, other than I could put her into like a little mini bank and just keep giving her some nurse bees or something.
Exactly.
But then I got to thinking, you know, I am really hard up for hives at the moment.
Yep.
And this is where the don't try this at home scenario starts coming into play.
The limits.
Yeah. So packages aren't big to begin with. And when they're really starting off, you're losing more bees than you're getting. You're not going to get any new bees for a minimum of like 30 days by the time they build out that comb and really get the process started. So I'm like, well, but I have this queen. And I have my conversion hive down there, which technically I can use the Langstroth side and I can put in a couple of combs of frames of comb that are already drawn out. One that has a little bit of food stores, both pollen and nectar in it that I had in the freezer.
Steal Sumner's bees from all of them.
Yeah, well, from all two. I mean, that's the kicker. Right. I only have two colonies at the moment, and they're both packages that just got installed 3 days ago. Right. So I decide, all right, I'm going to go back to each of the colonies. I'm going to take out the big comb that had eggs on it, and I'm going to take the queen off of it, and I'm going to put her back in there on the other comb, mm-hmm. and then I'm going to shake everybody on that comb into a container, and then I'm going to go to the other hive, and I'm going to do the same thing. And that's exactly what I did. Both the queens were on the big combs. I gently picked her up, set her on another comb in the hive, shook everybody off that into a container, put a lid on it, went to the next hive, did it again. Go down to my top bar conversion hive, added in two combs.
Right.
Just the two frames. That was it. The other three frames I put in is just blank. And then I dumped all of the bees down there and I put the queen cage in there. And then I screwed that sucker back together and locked him in.
Yeah.
I was like, you're not going anywhere. Even if I was hoping they haven't oriented because they were on the comb. And so they wouldn't be, they wouldn't be the foragers and stuff. So, but I locked them in just in case. And I made them stay that way all day yesterday and all day today until just before we started doing the recording. And then I opened up the thing.
They had resources, right? They had food. So it doesn't matter.
They've got bee bread and they've got nectar and honey in there. So, So now it's fingers crossed because what I have done is effectively made all of my colonies tiny.
Oh, you took that many bees? I wouldn't have taken a whole lot.
Well, I just took everybody that was on one comb, but
that's a bit, yeah.
It was a decent sized comb, and so it was still a good chunk of bees. But I'm like, oh well, we'll see, because now I've got three very tiny packages that are turning into colonies.
You know, there are 10,000 or so bees per package. So,
there are. I'm thinking they can spare 1,000.
And in all likelihood, when you were visiting, they can spare a couple, but the foragers were probably out. So it looks like it's smaller than it is.
Right. That's true. Hopefully there was foragers that are going to be coming back and helping that out. And then hopefully these other bees, they'll figure it out. They've got some food stores in there until they get going. There's place for the comb. The only kicker though is, yet again, I'm going to have to go out there and make sure that they did let her out of that cage and that she doesn't die in there.
You might have to keep giving them once in a while a little bit of comb and capped brood or something, a little bit.
Something.
Boost them little by little, get them to reestablish themselves to an acceptable size.
Yeah, because at the moment, nobody is acceptable. But I'm just happy that I've got three quote-unquote colonies. By definition, they're all in individual hive bodies. They all have individual queens.
Right.
I have three colonies.
How big of a cluster would you say?
That is left over or that I got put in there?
No, for each of them right now. Well, probably.
So I would say that what's remaining in the two packages is easily cantaloupe sized. So decent balls inside there. And then what ended up going into the other container to make the third tiny little colony? I'm not sure on that one.
A grapefruit? No, that's too much.
It was probably bigger than a grapefruit, but not a lot.
Okay, well, you should be getting her through enough time to get her boosted, because you're getting more bees too, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. I have two more packages coming, and then I've got three more packages coming and two nukes.
Yeah, so the nukes are going to be able to boost everybody too.
Right, I can always take a frame of brood out of one of those nukes and stick it into that one because I've got the conversion already set up. So that would help boost them up right away, and they should be good. Again, assuming they make it that long,
right,
and they accept the queen and they let her out and everybody's doing
well. Don't
get
robbed out.
Right, so that too.
If you're on a nectar flow, that shouldn't be an issue. But if you're
We are actually in the middle of all of our trees are starting to bloom. So we've got all of the red buds are already in bloom. The Bradford pears have actually just stopped, except there's some late bloomers there. The dogwoods are just starting to bloom. And there's some tree with yellow flowers that I cannot identify that makes little yellow balls of flowers way up in the air that I don't think you would notice. But it's starting to bloom. And I don't know what that one is.
So between the temperatures being warm enough, because that would be the biggest concern at this time of the year, that, you know, if it gets too cool, they have a hard time keeping the brood that they're going to make.
That's true. Warm.
But I think that you couldn't have done this at a better time. Maybe later might have been better, but yes. Yeah.
At least it's a start. Like I said, I'm so hard up for colonies at the moment. I'm like, right. All right. We're just going to try it. And like you said, I've got more coming. So worst case scenario, if it fails and all three of my packages die, because we do have two more days coming up where the temperatures are going to get down to like 38 degrees.
Oh, are you kidding me?
No. And that was not originally in the forecast, but this massive storm that's coming through tonight has a cold front behind it, and it's going to drop our nighttime lows down. But that's just the nighttime lows, not the daytime highs.
And it's so, when? It's like in the next few days?
It's going to be Thursday and Friday. So, yeah.
This week. So, in a couple of days.
In a couple of days, yeah.
From that standpoint, personally, I'm not so worried because there's not enough brood.
That's true.
And enough of the capped or the open larvae for the bees to try to keep warm, right? So, they won't overextend themselves with that. And
worst case scenario.
Totally fine. Yes.
Yeah, worst case scenario, the eggs die and they just redo them.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not that bad. That they won't be set back too much if that's the case.
Well, that's good. But again, if it fails, the only person to blame is myself. But I do have, exactly. As I just said, three more packages and two more nukes coming. So I won't be hiveless except for maybe a couple of weeks. So just fair warning to anybody out there listening going, well, John did it.
Well, yeah, you don't. Okay. So this is where experience and a certain flair for the craft of beekeeping comes into play, because you kind of leverage your years of experience in working with bees and what has worked and what hasn't worked to know how far you can push it and what to do. You think more out of the box, literally.
Yeah.
And you just kind of start playing, you know, resources here, resources there, and it's a strategy. And you know, also you're projecting forward to what could be coming in later. And in the grand scheme of things, it's highly unlikely that you're going to lose the two bigger ones and even the small ones. What's going to happen maybe is they don't accept the queen and there's a failure to thrive. You can always recombine them later.
Right? Yeah, I could take those bees and mix them back in if that were the case. So it's not in the grand scheme of things. It's not uber risky, but at the same time, it defies everything that we would teach a beginner beekeeper about what you should and shouldn't do, especially with packages.
Yeah. It's not advice I would give. It's not very reasonable, but in the grand scheme of things, I agree with you, it should work.
Yeah. So what I based this on, again, is very loosely based, but in Texas, you remember the story about my very favorite queen that I kept for 5 years, and like she was my favorite. But I kept moving her into smaller and smaller colonies as she got older and older. And the last thing was like, all right, this is it. You should be done. You got to go away. But I didn't have the heart to do it. So I built her this ridiculously small nuke that was a top bar nuke. And we're talking ridiculously small. Across the top of it was only 4 inches.
Oh, wow.
And then it was only like 3 inches down. It was dumb, tiny, small. And it only had three little combs in it. And then it had empty bars. And I literally, with my hand, took one handful of bees and plopped them in there with her and then sealed it up. And I gave them a little tiny sugar roll and they had a little tiny pollen roll. And that was it. And they overwintered in that teeny tiny little nuke.
That's awesome.
And they survived. And then she filled it all up. They built comb out and I had to take them out and put them into a legitimate hive where they could expand all that out. Cause they just
like,
had
I'm
these
not done.
Yeah. They just had these ridiculously little like baby mating nuke size combs.
Well, I mean, so my big philosophy is if they keep performing, I'm not getting rid of them. I'm just going to give them full range and do everything. And yeah, I mean, if you see the colony start to falter, I'll do a split. I might try to, you know, set her aside like a supersedure kind of.
Yeah, that's what I
was like, you did.
Yeah, that's what I kept doing. She was my queen that I used to raise all of my original queens off of. So she was my mother queen, my breeding stock. And every year she got older, I had more and more fear that they would either swarm or supersede her just because of her age and I would lose her. So I would do the split and I would put her into the split and then I would requeen the big colony. And then I just kept when that colony got bigger, the split got bigger. Well, then I'd do it again and I'd move her again.
Right. See, that was a protection from losing her.
Yep. I didn't want her to go
eggs
away.
And give that as a source of genetics to other colonies to make their own queens too.
Yep. That was exactly what I used her for. She was my first egg breeding donor. Program experiments with raising my own queens.
She was your egg donor.
She was. Yes. So anyhow, so there you go. There's the very long short version. The very long short version.
I like it because I think it's confident and it's basing all this on bee biology. There's a lot of things that come into play and it's pulling out of a whole lot of parameters to make it work. So I think it's going to work.
I hope so, because I would love to have one extra colony I wasn't planning on.
Yeah. That'll be fun.
Okay, so bee biomes and all that fun stuff. As you have hopefully heard us say, or remember hearing us say, we talk about how wax is lipophilic. It likes to pull things in. It absorbs anything that has an oil content to it. And it is one of the external systems of the bee's immune system. It almost acts like their liver and kidneys pulling things and filtering it away. So you've heard all that stuff.
Right.
But we've also talked about the fact that you can find trace elements of things like chemicals from the environment inside there too.
Absolutely. In the honey and everything.
That's right. So in your news feeds as of late, you may or may not have noticed, if you get bee things in your news feeds, that there has been new research how beehives are actually helping identify different things going on within a city and being able to identify the microbiome of a city all the way down to the microscopic level, which just cracks me up. So bees are now helping in a way that nobody would have ever intended a bee to do.
Well, you remember when they were testing the sewage waters from cities to find out how much COVID was present in that city.
Right.
It kind of reminded me of that concept.
It does, actually, in a little bit of the way. Yeah, that's true. And I've heard this before when they looked just specifically at pesticides based on different areas and neighborhoods, where you could say, well, this neighborhood had a higher concentration of these specific chemicals, and you could actually kind of tell, like, a more heavily treated area versus a more natural wild area. So we've heard those types of things too, but now they're going through and they're looking at bacteria, mold, spores from different types of funguses.
Pathogens. All kinds of things, yes.
Yep, and so they can kind of get an idea of the specific microclimate of a city and all of the little things that happen in that city and all the tiny microscopic things that make it go round are now actually being able to be found inside of a colony because they get on the pollen, the bees, it sticks to the bees as they fly through the air. The same concepts that help attract the electromagnetism to help pollen stick to the bee kind of helps other things stick to it too. So they get dust particulates and soot from like smoke and ash and things, and these other bacterias and fungal spores and things like that can attach to the bee. They make it into the colony and then it gets spread throughout the colony. And depending on its composition, gets absorbed into the wax.
Right. So basically the biosphere is the fact that in the atmosphere, you have a lot of organic compounds that are floating in the air. And they're catching those and bringing it back, like you said. So it's really a part of the ecosystem. And as such, each city has its own ecosystem, its own specific thing. I read part of the underlying study, and it was one of the things that stuck to my mind was Venice. And it had wood rot present, you know, organisms that live in wood rot and aquatic kind of organisms as well.
That makes sense.
That makes sense, right? Because, you know, it's built on stilts and rotting out in the water, and you've got all that water over there. So it was really fascinating to read. And they did that in several cities, including in Australia, I think in Brooklyn, New York, and I forget where else. But yeah, it was fascinating to read. I thought that the process that they were using was using all the kinds of debris that are in the hive. And they were looking at honey, they were looking at the gut of the bees as well, the gut microbiome of the bees, to try to analyze everything and how much of that was coming from the bees' digestive system versus, you know, they have a crop, right? So there's a valve, the proventriculus valve, that's a one-way valve that doesn't let the gut bacteria come back into the crop so that it's not contaminated. It's kind of, basically it's not bee, honey's not bee vomit. I mean, everybody's like, oh yeah, honey's bee vomit, but it's not.
It's bee regurgitation in a way though, because they do have to spit it back up.
It's not bee vomit.
It did not come from the second stomach, only the first one.
That's exactly right. And that one is clean and you know, there's no bacteria in there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not specifically the same, but it's the same concept of the chickens and birds where they actually have a crop. Their crop, they store stones in and they use those stones to pre-grind their food so that once it goes into their actual stomach, they can digest it. The bee's crop is a bucket to carry liquid.
Right. It's basically, and they do spit a little spit, a few enzymes and a few lactobacillus bacteria, whatever that's called. But they do inoculate it when they transport it, right? And when they're doing the trophallaxis and exchanging with their other house bees to kind of start curing that. And it's fascinating how it does get transformed, but it is not bee vomit. It's more like bee spit. But I thought that was fascinating that analyzing all that could also give you indications of things like climate change, right? So because it's all linked together and it's all floating in the air and it impacts all the organisms around that area. And it might be an expensive way to kind of analyze that kind of stuff.
I mean, I think every research project they do is an expensive way to do whatever it is they're researching.
Like, I don't think you and I will be able to do that anytime soon.
No, I do not believe so. But one thing that I thought was kind of a cool analogy that goes back to a couple episodes ago when you and I were talking about wax and we were talking about how it kind of contains both the resonance story and the pheromone story of that colony. Mm-hmm. Well, now, not only is it telling the story and the history of that colony, it's also telling the story and the history of whatever city that colony lived in.
That's right. Yeah. And I think that had implications for some cities that had issues with health and you know, some of the pollution from the big, you know,
your factories and refineries and things like that. Yeah.
Things like that. But mostly I think that the initial goal and probably one of the best applications of this is epidemic surveillance, like having an analysis of what's going on, what's coming up in the world of epidemic. And again, tying it back to COVID, that's one of the tools that could have been used, right?
Right. We never thought of.
Exactly. And it's certainly more fun than going through sewage extract. Oh,
I will go take samples from my beehives any day. Just don't put me in the sewer.
Exactly. So that's a good one.
But. That is. It's very cool. So yet again, more fascinating information out there about bees and what they are doing and how they can help and how they are extremely in tune with the environment. So much so that the hive itself actually shows different signs and samplings of what's going on around it. So that is super cool.
That is super cool. And you know what's even more cool, but of course I'm biased, is that in one of the studies, they use both Langstroth and Topper Hives.
A Topper Hive made it into a study.
Yes. It's like, woohoo, we're getting mainstream. Yes.
We did it. We made it into one.
No, but really, I mean, if you think about it, I think that it should be analyzed because it should not be based on necessarily the type of hive, right? So those results should be replicated. And also very often in Langstroth, you have plastic foundation that you wouldn't have in a Topper hive. So there's a difference there. So I think it does matter, but yeah.
I agree. And when you're doing the top bar version or a completely 100% foundationless Langstroth or Lands version, you're going to end up with pure unadulterated beeswax that did not have the plastic and the chemicals from that. And it also has not been coated with any type of rendered wax that they have sprayed onto it or rolled onto it. So you're getting a true example of what's there and not potentially some underlying static of what came through the manufacture process.
Right. And you have a better reflection of what happens in nature. Therefore, there's not as many parameters that are being altered that might not be reflecting what could be gathered. And it has nothing to do with actual samples and contents in the debris, but I do believe that a vibrant colony does better on natural comb because it can have all the optimal arrangement of the cells and the cell sizes that they need where they need it throughout the entire year, right? So from that standpoint, that's a little bit of a soapbox kind of a step aside kind of a thing. But I think it does matter because it's like you said, to your point, it's gonna not have all the other volatile compounds from the VOCs, from the plastic and all the residues from the commercial wax that's coating those. Excuse me. But there's all kinds of things that they were talking about propolis and the coating of the propolis on the inside. They were measuring that as well. The polyphenols that they are emitting, kind of like essential oils, keeping the health and all this stuff. They were also talking about the kind of bacteria that were thriving based on the composition of that propolis, right? So each area has different flora that's going to inform what that propolis is made of, and it's going to have a different, you know, so everything is kind of linked, and that's kind of goes back to that superorganism aspect of things. To me, it's fascinating articles because it does bring another facet to the, we're all linked, everything we do is linked, it all impacts the colony of bees, and the bees are going to be self-medicating with propolis and possibly mycelium from fungi outside of the hive, and all that is going to be tailored. That's what they do, they tailor the type of medicines that they're bringing into the colony to address the issues that they have with bacteria and other diseases. So they're basically custom making their drugs, based on all that. So all that could be, it's not just about city health and colony health. It's also about learning more about the bees and how it's all tied together at the superorganism level.
Well, and it's also, and yet again, I cannot believe I'm the one that's pointing this out and you didn't say it already, because every time this happens, I'm like,
what? I know what you're going to say. It starts with you and I.
No, I can't even spell. It's not that. It's not that one. It's on the positive side of that, not the unintended consequences. Not that.
Oh, okay.
Not that UNC. It is yet again another example of why hyperlocal and finding bees that are already attuned to your area.
Yes.
It's just yet another pin in the hat or feather in the hat for that type of scenario, because if you've got a specific microbiome that you're having to work with, which means you've got a specific type of fungal bacteria or fungal spore, those are used when they actually go through and do the fermentation to actually ferment like pollen and break those pollen kernels apart. So if you've got a different pre-probiotic type mixture inside there that they're actually coming into counter with, that colony is going to have to utilize it in a different way or have some other type of mechanism. The bacteria that are in there are going to do, you know, things or create things that other ones wouldn't. Certain bacteria might break things and chelate them down so that you get more of the available nutrients. Other ones may produce some sort of completely different substance, you know, as they go through and consume things. Right. So if you have that microbiome and they are adapted to it, then that species of bee, or that not that species, but that specific lineage of bee is then going to be more adapt, and their offspring will be more adapt for that area and that region. So,
right. And you're entirely right. And that goes right where what I talk about quite a bit. And the other aspect of things is that if they're starting to analyze this, and if they're starting to look at it from that angle, I'm hoping it's going to start motivating people to put more research into gut microbiome and in all the microbial, the ecosystem that's going on in the hives as well, and inform beekeepers that when anything you put in there basically can mess with that. And especially those chemicals, those pesticides, and especially those essential oils that are going to interfere with a lot of that. And so that's something that we all need. And even when you use organic acids and you're acidifying the environment, maybe not by that much each application, but compounded over time, that might have an impact. And we all know that gut microbiomes are impacted by the acidity of the environment, right? So all that is tied together. And yeah, that's very important as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it is. So there you go, everybody. There is more insightful bee knowledge out there, more research currently being done, and another beekeeper chat to go through and pit it in a way that maybe you can see one side or the other of the story, or hopefully both sides of it, and kind of make some more informed decisions about how you do your own beekeeping. Right. So hopefully you have enjoyed. And as always, we look forward to talking to you again next week. But until then, be good.
And be mindful.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye, guys.
This Hive Jive production was made possible by amazing patrons like you. And we appreciate your support. To all our Hive Jive junkies out there, you truly are the bee's knees.